6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/listen. That's forhers.com/listen. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
That's a gay ass podcast.
What? That's a gay ass podcast.
What?
A really, really, really gay podcast that we call That's a Gay Ass Podcast.
That's a gay ass name for a gay ass podcast.
Welcome back to That's a Gay Ass Podcast, the podcast that asks, whose fault is it that you're gay? It is me, Eric Williams, and this week, Bera Foa is on the podcast, who you know from stage and screen. He is currently starring in The Residence on Netflix with a ton of huge names. Uzo Aduba fucking kills in this show, but he also stars alongside our queen mother, Kylie Minogue. Bera Foa is not only a star of The Residence, but he did 12 years of NCIS Los Angeles. But I first came to know him from his Broadway past, which, of course, we talk about. We talk Broadway, boys, and more. So enjoy this episode with Bera Foa. Bera Foa, I always tell you how handsome you are, and today is no exception. The mustache is mustachioing. The deep V is making me feel twirly in my tummy. Barrett, thank you for looking so gorgeous for this gay-ass podcast.
For you, anything.
Are you joking? How lucky am I? Can I also ask
for the
you-
dad? For the dad in, what is it? Which one is it?
Inside Out.
Which dad are you? Inside Out.
I like it.
So hot. I've always had a crush on you.
That's so sweet. And now I'm like trying not to blush, but I already have an immediate follow-up question, which is, are there any other cartoon people that you have thought about getting in the sheets with?
I feel like any of those dudes from any of those cartoons, like their hand. I'm a hand guy. So they all have like those like big square hands. And I'm just like, I just want that grabbing me and like telling me where to go and like maybe in my mouth. I just want all.
You like to be directed. In my mouth. You're always good with direction. And we know that first and foremost. Now, just so the listeners know, I met you through a friend. But what I did not tell you when I met you is that I was low-key a fangirl of Bera Foa for years before having met you, because you not only have done many a Broadway show that I'm obsessed with, but you are that type of Broadway king that has so incredibly crossed over into the television work, which we will get into. But you also did something that we have not compared notes on, and you went to the same theater summer camp that I went to, Interlaken.
Oh, the best. Oh my God, we have so much to unpack with Interlaken.
Girl, I know. So let me do my first unpacking. When you go to Interlaken, What age did you go? And my obvious follow-up is, did you have a boy kiss at summer camp?
F yeah, of course I did.
Tell me everything.
Let's see. So let me just back up a little bit to give you some perspective about how much Interlaken meant to me.
Please.
Because I started out going to all boys, all sports, 8-week sleepaway sports nightmare. It was so terrible.
I'm so sorry.
And that was like fourth grade, fifth grade, sixth grade, seventh grade, like the prime years. And just all the boys were like boying and like team sports and like color war. And I was like, I hate all of this. And mom was like, you always want to like sort of be in the plays there or like in the arts and crafts hut. Or water skiing, because that was a solo sport. So they're like, do you want to go to theater camp? I'm like, I think that. I did go to French Woods for one summer.
Shout out.
Shout out to French Woods. It was great, but it was like not totally the place for me. I loved it, but my parents were like, I think there's something a little more like organized for you. I think you need a little more structure. And boy, does Interlaken have structure. I mean, it was like, you've got a uniform. I was like, a what? A uniform? Uh-uh. And like, just like white glove inspection in the morning when they, you know, clean up, you know, no dirty things. We got the arts. We got to be
militant,
focused. So, and we had forced fun. Remember forced fun? Did they have forced fun?
Oh my God,
there?
Yes.
Okay. So anyway, Interlaken. So I was like, it kicked my ass, but in the way that I needed, because I was like, I'm unfocused. And everyone was always like, Barrett just needs to like sit still and not be the social butterfly. Oh. And I was like, but look over there. There's a tiny thing. And like, let's be fun over here. And blah, blah, blah. And they're like, can you just be quiet and focus? And I'm like, right. But this is the arts and it's fun. Like, you don't really need to do that. And I didn't get that, like, you had to work
right
for the arts.
Was it giving ADHD? Is that what young Barrett
you know,
was?
I don't think so.
It was
I don't
just
think so.
A
I think
gay
it was
boy
just like,
with expression.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to talk to the girls. I don't know. Yeah. And then, but like, I would sort of like not know my lines. I just like was,
oh.
I wasn't like serious about it. I didn't understand. And so Interlaken was like, this is where arts with a capital A happens.
Theater.
This isn't just
R-E.
Like musical theater camp. Right. Right. This is theater RE camp and arts with a capital A. And there's opera over there and there's pottery over there and there's creative writing over there and tuba players and bassoon players. And they're going to be in that practice hut, like bassooning some credenza for 8 hours until they get it right. And why aren't you doing that with your song? And I was like, well, because I can just like sing my song because that's just what singing is. And they're like, no, it's actually not.
Was trying to get by with his charm at 9 years old. And they said, sweetie pie, you need to know solfege. Okay.
Do, re, mi, fa. I don't know.
I don't either.
I do know sign language, but I don't know solfege.
What age did you go to Interlaken then?
To answer your original question. My high school summers, so 9th, 10th, 11th, 12th grade.
Oh, shit. So she was coming, yeah, so, she was growing her tits.
She was growing her tits. First summer, I was like, no, I'm not. No, that's not a, I'm not. But like the girl, like Kate Baldwin, anyone? Kate Baldwin.
Everyone.
Yeah, she was Hope Harcourt, and I was a controversial role in Anything Goes. Probably wouldn't play it today, but I was Ling, Chinese Convert number 2. We're just going to put it out there. It was a different time.
It was
we're
a different
own
time.
That.
Barrett, that, I did that, once on this island in high school. I played a light-skinned black man on an island, and we're here to say that
we're in a different time. Thank
we're
God.
In a different time. Thank God. Yes.
So, Kate Baldwin, I remember her being like, I mean, but maybe you are gay. And I was like, you're saying words that are not, I can't really. And then that was like the end of my first year. And then by the second year, everyone was like, you just are. And we're just going to treat you like that. And you just are. And I had a friend who was named Jason, who was sort of like the king of Interlaken. And he got every lead and he had the voice of an angel and he could dance and he could sing and he was funny. And he was the lead of every operetta and every musical. And he was just like unabashedly gay and talented and funny and the ringleader, and he just was my best friend, and he just took me by his side, and I like, looked up to him. And I remember at one point someone wrote like the F slur on a bathroom stall, and he responded with an essay, like not like a few words, not like fuck yourself, it was like being gay is an incredible blah, 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 like a paragraph. And then just a big Jason with his last name, signature.
Who,
that was just the 90s.
Who the fuck
this is
the
90s.
Jason? No, I cannot even imagine the chutzpah it took. Have you kept in touch with Jason, or are we just sending him positivity from these years
we
later?
We are sending him positivity. We were super good friends for a long time and then sort of fell out, but like not in a like blow up be sort of, it was just like, now it's time for this to not
of
be
course,
anymore.
Of course.
But I do love that man. And I a huge shout out to Jason. But like literally like my gay mentor.
I think we have to have a moment to say how rare it is to be pre coming out, especially if we're in the 90s, but at any point and you have someone who has already done the work and being confident as a, and also he's your age, like that is angel. Jason is giving angel.
Well, for sure. But as I sort of came into my own, I couldn't really embrace his confidence. It took me a while because of the way I grew up, which we can get into.
By all means. I mean, I feel like that's the perfect segue to ask you the gay ass podcast question, because you have such an interesting herstory and, of course, current status as a television starlina. But Barrett Foa, whose fault is it that you're gay? Who do we blame, babe?
You know what? It's Starlight Express's fault that I'm gay.
Delicious gay answer, Barrett. Starlight Express is one of the most niche gay musicals you could have said.
You guys, Gerard Jeffrey, who, it doesn't matter who Gerard Jeffrey is, but I went to school with him, and he had, for his 10th birthday, took like a few of us to go see, I grew up in New York City. So, and his like grandfather owned the like Gershwin Theater or the Eurus Theater, whatever it was called back then. There was some connection that he had to that show. And we went, and I was like, I don't know what this is. I think I might have seen a few couple Broadway shows, but they never like infiltrated. And I remember going in the lobby, and I was like, what is this about? Like, people are on roller skates, and are they junk? Is it junk? Do they have like junk on that? Is it like, are they? I don't know. I just thought it was junk. Didn't understand that it was trains. And I just was like, okay, I'm here for this Broadway experience with my friend. And just Starlight Express, just like the whole, it was so glorious. And I was like, what is that? And I remember going home being like, what did I see? How can I do that? How can I listen to that again? And they were like, I remember my parents being like, go get the cast recording. And I was like, what are you talking about? Oh, I don't understand what that is. And they're like, go to the like tape store. And I got the double cassette. And it was, of course, of the London recording, which, so I was like, I don't understand why these people have British accents and why some of those songs are different because they changed it for Broadway. But like, no one's schooling, you know, no one's being like, sometimes they change things or this version and that's the that version. And you're just like, I have questions in my mind. I don't know how to answer them. There's no internet. But I'm like, I'm going to put on this double tape and just play all four sides back to front to back, and just in my mirror, my full-length mirror, and just like act out I know every freaking word to that musical. So
and I am so sorry, Barrett. I don't know the actual cast record ting, but I just know that they're trains on skates, hon.
Well, here's the deal. I grew up, I went to London to study for a semester, and for my 20th birthday, I was like, I want to go see Starlight Express, which was still playing back then. Now it's back, which I want to go see. And actually, I hear it's really good.
My friend just saw it like 3 days ago and said it was incredible. And he was sending pictures from, it's like an immersive experience. Like, it looks big budge, big train. Yeah,
all of it. I want to lay down on the tracks and then
you want a train to run on you, but an actual literal train, cars.
Okay, so here's another really good story. So on my 20th birthday, I go see Starlight Express with my friends. And I think we're standing room and like the trains are running by us. And I'm just like, oh my God, the guy who played Rusty is just so cute. I love him so much. That's the lead guy. And we wait backstage after the show. And we're like, I'm such a huge fan. And they're like, we're going to this like wedding. We're getting on this bus. But like, come back or something. I don't know. And I was like, I'm coming back. And I went back the next day. I got a house seat. So I was like row D center. And I was like, Rusty is singing right to me. I know it. I think he's actually met my eyes many times. And there was one of those things where you're like, he's looking at me. Maybe I should wave. Maybe so he knows. But you know, he's not looking at me. But I was convinced he was in love with me. And I was in love with him. We were having communication. And I went backstage again and I was like, hey, I don't know if you remember me, but it was my birthday the other day and I'm back. And I just want to, and I was like, do you want to grab a pint? That's what you said in London. You know,
grab a pint.
And he's like, let's go grab a pint, right? And then we go into the pub, and then he like sees his friends, and he's like, "Let's actually maybe go get like a Diet Coke." And then I was like, "Okay, great, great." And then he was like, "Let's just actually sit by this outdoor fountain and have a water." And I remember being like, "I've been demoted not once but twice." And he's like, "Great, okay, I gotta go." 2 years later, I'm the star of Avenue Q. My friends from London are in town. They come to see me. They're having a lunch in between shows. There's this guy next to me. I'm like, "Is your name James? Do you remember a fan coming to you in 1997, '97? And we went for that." And he was like, "Are you fucking kidding me? You are that kid?" I was like, he's like, "You're this, I just saw you in Avenue Q, and you were, and I saw you, and you, you saw him. I saw him as Rusty, and he saw me as Prince and Rod in Avenue Q." It was such an amazing full circle moment. We're still friends to this day. We have like total mutual love and respect for each other. James Gillum.
Oh my fucking God. There's something so satisfying about a long game. Can we agree that a long game, there's something so, I mean, especially if like the roles have reversed, because he was the main train, if you will. And then you
the main train, baby.
Had your fist in a puppet, bitch. Mm. And he said,
"I have my fist in more than, yeah, what?"
Oh my God, what an incredible story. It's like, I don't know what my, I don't know what my favorite
Starlight
part
Express
of it
really
is.
Did make me gay in like a lot of different ways.
Starlight Express is such a big part of your story.
It's the train that kept on running.
It's insane that the show that was the bug that bit was Starlight Express. Obviously, it's Andrew Lloyd Webber's best show. I'm so gagged. Were there any other shows when you were growing up in New York? My actual question is, I lived in New York for a long time, and I thought a lot of the people that grew up in New York were kind of like a different type of crazy person. Do you think you have the type of crazy that kids who grew up in New York City have?
That's a really good question. A lot of people are like, "You're from New York. I don't get it. I think, you know, you sort of look like you're from Oklahoma, and you're like really nice." Yeah. And I think I always liked that juxtaposition of like, I'm smarter than you think. I'm more aware than you think. I can walk down the street and not get mugged and, you know, like figure out the subway and like know where I am and just that kind of New York savvy. But I can like look a little bit like I'm blonde and I'm just young and like this Twinkie, well, back then. And I liked that thing. And I think people were like, "Oh, he's smart." And I think it took me a while to figure out that I was smarter than I looked or thought, you know? And then so people were like, "Oh, you, let's actually have you be the lead because you're not just like a ding dong chorus boy."
Sure.
And at first I was, because I could dance like well enough. So I would get in that way. And then people were like, "Give him those lines. Wait, give him that solo." And then so it would like in summer stock, I would like beep, boop, 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 boop.
Interesting. Well, then that does beg the next question then. If you eventually become gay via Starlight Express, you go to Interlochen, and you might not become like the confident gay that Jason was, but what was like, did you have your first boyfriend then at an early age? Did you sort of wait until you went to UMich until you were really exploring?
I wasn't really in boyfriend mode. I think I was like in survey mode. And I think there's part of, I do want to mention this because I think it's an important part of the story. It's the 90s in New York City. And, you know, I came out at 14 but I wasn't like out at school. I was like, it was very 90s. I was very don't ask, don't tell.
Sure.
It was like very Bill Clinton.
Yep.
And it was like, people know, but you don't have to say it. That's at school at Dalton. I went to the Dalton School in New York City. And then, but at Interlochen, I was out. But it was like, that was a special gay arts haven. So it's the 90s, AIDS everywhere, especially New York City. My mom's in like the design sort of journalism world and just like a lot of friends. And you know, health ed was strong at Dalton. They were like, "This is what AIDS is. We're going to tell you all about it and scare the shit out of you." And then dad was like, there was a few talks, and he said this exact sentence to me many times, and it still makes me cry a little bit. But he would be like, he'd be like, if you, sorry, wow. He's like, if you got AIDS, I would cry forever. And like, I just remember being like, I don't want to have my dad cry forever. I mean, it's like I know he was trying to save me, but it also made me be like, I can't have sex because my dad will be disappointed if something happens that's wrong. And I think he just meant like, have safe sex, you know, be safe. But
it felt like your pleasure might be his pain.
And so I wasn't not sexual, but I was like, I will save the big one for someone I love. But then I grew up, and then it's like, I'm in my 20s, and now it's like sort of not cute anymore that I'm like in my young 20s and like a quote unquote virgin.
Yeah.
In that way. Although I was like experienced, I just wasn't like, let me do this. And I remember being like, well, I'm sort of waiting for, you know, someone I love. And of course that would scare everyone off. Cause it'd be like, well, do I love you? You know,
especially gay guys in their 20s.
Yeah. We're just so, but like maybe it saved me because also I was in New York and I was like cruising the streets a little bit and I was going to the Rambles and I was in Central Park and I was walking down the street and like, sometimes it was just the attention. Sometimes it was just a guy on the subway that I could like, if I got his attention or I could like rub up against him a little bit, that was like a sort of hot thing and all I needed for the validation.
I mean, Barrett, it's so, so relatable. And even from someone who didn't grow up in New York City, I've talked about this a few times, but the short version is that my parents gave me a sex talk before college and I have a twin brother who is straight, was 30 seconds long. And mine was, you need to be careful. The world is scary. An older man will violate you and then you will get HIV. And so I did the same thing as you, which was that anytime I wanted to either experiment or experience pleasure or have sex, I too waited to lose my virginity to someone that I put on a pedestal because maybe that would make it less likely that I would catch anything. And I'm still now in my 30s undoing the fear and the shame of it. And it's a double-edged sword because our parents only wanted us to live, right? And so we can't fault your dad. We cannot fault my parents, but we can also acknowledge the fact that it created such a sense of fear in us that we need to sort of reclaim our own power and gratitude to the fucking people who made PrEP and all of it. It's just like,
yeah, I think that, and also just, you know, for like my current boyfriend, like, he's in his 30s and he's just like, there is just a
freedom,
and it's just an open chestness to him where he's like, I don't understand. Like I don't have any shame. Like, where's this shame coming from? And I'm like, I'm going to borrow a little bit of this energy because I'm safe. I'm on PrEP. I'm safe with you. I understand what's going on. I'm in my power. And I don't need to be like squirmy.
Can I steal some of your boyfriend's freedom? I want some of that too. I mean,
here's the secret. It's yours. It's all of ours. It's all of ours. It's just like, how do you tap into that? How do you access that? How do you have someone that makes you feel that safe? How do you feel safe in the world for yourself?
It's so well said. And I really just like want to tell you how grateful I am for your openness to talking about all of this. And I think that it's helpful to acknowledge that we are not permanently fucked up if we have hangups or shame. It's just, I think the beauty of it is that we can acknowledge where we still struggle. And I think to do it now and then have a bigger, better, gayer, hornier life, is so much better than living the rest of our days feeling like we're a victim to our own, the things that were told to us.
Oh my God. I highly recommend doing the work. I mean, it's
do
so
the
boring
work,
but, and then keep doing it because I have so many different sort of phases. I have so many different phases of my life, of my sex life, of my coming out life. you know, people say, oh my God, you came out at 14. You must be so like advanced. And I'm like, in some ways. And then in other ways, again, I was like still did in this other way and still am. And then we can go into apps or we can go into the dark days. Like when my mom was sick and I was like, this will help.
I find it to be so interesting that when you think about someone growing up in New York and you saying that, you know, people assume if you came out at such a young age, you lived in such a big city, you're good to go. But it's actually so interesting to see how our upbringing plus our lived experiences can actually translate to what makes us have shame or what makes us tick. And I find it so interesting that you got the Starlight Express bug moment happened, and then you found yourself at a pretty young age booking the big Broadway. What was it like? Well, first of all, tell the listeners who don't know, what was like your first show that you did on Broadway and that led you to eventually starring in Avenue Q and doing Spelling Bee and all that?
Okay, so first show on Broadway was the original cast of Mamma Mia. I was the swing. So I covered all seven of the guy ensemble roles.
Wow.
I knew all three harmony parts and all seven dance roles and like whatever. It was fun to be in a hit because we were the fifth company of Mamma Mia. So it had already been in Australia and London and North American tour and Toronto.
Yeah.
And we were the fifth company. So it wasn't like, I hope this show's going to be good. It's like, this show is already a hit. Now we just get to do it on Broadway and you get to be in it. And so that was awesome, but it wasn't that risky. Like, oh my God, is this going to be good? I think it's just like, here's the track. You go here, you go here. I mean, we want your spin on it, but this is what the musical is. So that I was in that for 6 months. It was pretty brief. I got a different show that was like a lead in something and I was like, I don't want to be a chorus boy. I like checked off my chorus boy thing, my Broadway, you know, my Broadway debut. I've been on Broadway now, but I'm like, I want to play roles and I'm starting to do that. So I did, you know, and people are like, you're leaving this show that pays so much money for a regional theater gig that lasts for 6 weeks. And I'm like,
good for you.
But partly is because I could, because I was born and raised in New York City. So after college at University of Michigan, I just moved back in with my parents.
Fuck yeah.
And there was, you know, like there was a stocked fridge and I didn't have to buy any furniture or pay any rent. And like, I could say yes to free shit and not have a day job at all.
Yeah.
So that was so lucky. And so I got to do those things. And then that helped me get like confidence and like a bigger resume earlier on. And then I started auditioning for Avenue Q. And I remember being like, wait, I don't puppeteer. And they're like, they know, but they're starting to realize that they need to train actors to be puppeteers because you can't really train a puppeteer to act. Because if you can't act already, you know, like that's just too big a thing. So I was this big guinea pig, Eric. I was like, I was the first person in puppet camp. It was me and this other guy. And it was to be the understudy for Prince and Rod for John Tartaglia. And we like locked ourselves in a studio with these puppets for a weekend with like Rick Lyon, who taught us how to do it all. And anyway, got hired and then was on the role like 2 weeks later. Had to learn the entire role plus the entire art of puppetry in 2 weeks. It was nuts. And then I was the understudy for a year and a half. And I went on a lot because John Tartaglia was like the man of the moment. And he was saying yes to everything as he should. He got Tony nominated and he was like hosting and da-da-da. And but like by the end of the week, he'd be like, and I'd be like, I'm ready to go on. And I think the producers were like, this guy's good. Let's step him up instead of getting like a star to come in.
Yeah.
They're like, let's bump the understudy up, which is sort of a rare thing sometimes on Broadway because I knew another role and I was really valuable in that role. Knowing two roles, it was so freaking fun and so hard.
I mean, and by the way, Avenue Q,
it was exhausting.
That's how I first came to see your work, is I would see clips and I was in Avenue Q, like I was obsessed with the show. It was one of the first, you know, shows that I really pored over the cast recording and like try to do the harmonies in my car in high school. And like, I mean, I really, really love that show. But do you think it's partly that because the show was hot and there were people coming to see you, was that helpful in when you did eventually go to LA to try to make it in television? Was there any sort of crossover that made that happen?
There was. I went right after. So I was in Avenue Q for 2.5 years. And then I went
to Spelling Bee.
Right into Spelling Bee for about a year. And then there was a couple of years of some fun, regional things, and I started doing some more plays, and I was like, huh.
Which, by the way, you did Angels in America in St. Louis, Missouri at the Repertory Theater. And when I fly to St. Louis, I see your face at Lambert International.
I'm just doing my most subtle work. It's like a picture of me being like,
well, yeah, I mean, you're fucking, you're prior in Angels in America. That's not
Angels in America,
an easy role.
Screaming for my life to the angel. It's greatest veins popping.
It is.
But that was so incredible. Wow. And that came at the right time in my gay journey, because if it had come a month late earlier, I would have been like, no, I'm a Joe. I'm not prior. I'm a Joe. I'm like, no, I'm prior.
Sweetie, you're a prior sweetie.
And I was like, oh, I can finally lean into my being fabulous. And
yes.
I mean, it was, and being ugly and scary and gross and, you know, lesions and just all that stuff that I remember watching early on when I saw it and being like, I don't want to be that role. It's scary and he's dying. I don't want to be that. And then I was like, I can totally lean into this now. This fabulous, acid tongued, why the fuck is this happening to me? I'm a drag queen on the side, performance artist. That was so fun.
But it's also kind of a gag that you move to LA, you book NCIS, and then you do it for 12 years. That is not nothing.
12 years.
This season, a new hot deal has arrived at Metro. $25 a line for 4 lines with all the data you need and 4 free Samsung Galaxy A15 5G phones. Getting Metro's best deals is easy. No ID required, no activation fees. Get a new number or keep your own. It's up to you. That's 4 lines for $25 a line. Plus 4 free phones. Visit a store or go online today. Only at Metro by T-Mobile.
When you join Metro Plus Tax, for a limited time and subject to change, max one offer per account.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. Prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/listen. That's forhers.com/listen. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
And then, of course, we have to cut to it. This is the moment where I need to bring up The Residence, because talk about a gay show. I mean, the fact that not only are you acting across Kylie goddamn Minogue, I think Uzo Aduba is so fucking good in this show. I obviously think you are spectacular, and to see you as the first gentleman to see a gay president. And I know this has been written about, but I just want to echo the fact that this show, which is so gay in the sense that it's fully Clue, in the White House. But the fact that Paul William Davies gave us a gay president and then that was not either a punchline or that was not like the funny gag of the century. The funny gag is that Kylie Minogue has to keep performing because they're all kept in the White House. And oh, by the way, Bronson Pinchot, who plays the crazy designer in First Wives Club, who was also in The Residence. I just need to shout out like there Jane Curtin, gay icon, Eliza Coop, who is in one of my favorite shows of all time, Happy Endings. I mean, the cast is so fucking stacked. Did it feel like doing a Shonda show, doing a show that had a bit of a Knives Out moment? Did the set feel like sort of gay, kiki, pinch me, we're lucky to be here?
Like 100%.
It felt that from watching it.
It was like, we were karaokeing on the weekends, like as a cast. We were like, this is so fun. Like, and the way there's so many people in the cast, but a lot of people were together for a lot of the time, and those select people really got close. And we knew it was special. We knew it was expensive. We knew it was like sassy and funny, but really just that script. It's like everyone read that script and was like, I have to be in this. And then when I actually auditioned for it and then I actually got it, I was like, I got that thing that was like the one thing that I was like, this is the best thing I've ever read. Like the thing that I got and then sent immediately to my writer friend saying, you have to read this. And he's like, what the fuck is this? Because even on the page, it's hilarious. He brings, like, even the action lines in between the dialogue are like, stay with me. Like, he's funny in the action lines. And you're like, oh, you can set the tone there too? Like, that's allowed? And he sort of overwrites them and makes the audience your friend even in the writing.
The show is just, it's so fucking good. And I
love it.
To see you being the first gentleman, this like kind of quirky, disorganized, like hilarious guy is so thrilling, not only because I know you, but to see someone that has such chops like you do and you bring such a humanity to the comedy. I know there's been some like people asking about a season two, and even Paul William Davies has said like he would be lying if he didn't say that he had been thinking of ideas. But like, what's the word around the cast? Is it just like, we're just crossing our fingies?
I think it's cross your fingies. I think, you know, it's like Uzo and Edwin Park and maybe Isaiah, like they are like the three detectives that go on the new case. And then, I mean, like the dream would be like, take some of the yummies from this cast and cast them in different characters, like a rep company. Like, how cool would that be? Because it was just such good chemistry. We all just vibed and got along. And how cool would it be to be like playing different people but being the same actors?
You all, it's an iconic idea. And I also, speaking of like the incredible cast, if we do a full circle to Kylie Minogue for a second,
please, more kind always.
You have an interview where you talked about that she hooked you up with front row tickets to her Vegas residency.
Yes, I just want to say, thank you, Kylie. Okay, so she comes on set and she's like next to me in the makeup trailer. And I'm just like, I'm freaking out because I feel like, honestly, not a ton of people on set were like Kylie Minogue, but not a ton of people on set were gay. So I was like, well, I'm gay and I play a gay guy and I play the guy who lives in the house that she's performing in. And my character is into Kylie Minogue, and Barrett Foa is also into Kylie Minogue. So I am going to say a big hello. She was so nice. And then we're like in the same room together vibing. And I don't know if you saw me. They tried to cut around as best they could. But I was like, I'm not going to act here. I'm just going to bop to this front row concert that I'm getting from Kylie Minogue. On the breaks, she would teach me choreography. There's a video of it. I still have to post it. I don't know why I haven't.
You need to.
And then she got me front row tickets to her Vegas residency. And when I say front row tickets, it's not like, here's the front row. It was like cabaret tables. And like there's this circle of where she's performing and I'm here. And at one point she had a small like wardrobe malfunction, just a small thing that like sort of fell off. She did not have her mic stand, but she did have her mic. And she looks at me and she hands me her red mic because she knew she could trust me. And she like pinned her thing. And there's a video of me also being like, I have Kylie's mic. And I'm like, should I say ba-dum-ba-dum right now? Like, am I supposed to say something? And then she's like, give it the fuck back. And then saw her afterwards. She was so sweet. She was so nice. And then she hooked me up again in a week or two. I'm going to be front row at her concert in LA. So can't wait. We're going to be with the whole Residence cast. I can't wait to have like a whole.
Oh my God.
Reunion with Kylie.
I know the gays listening are gagged to hear. We always
have her number in my phone.
Oh,
wait, you got to hear this story. We took some pictures together and she's like, send me those. And so we're trying the airdrop. Not working. She goes, just text me +44. And I'm like,
+44.
Can you believe?
No, I'm like, I'm trying not to like tear up from just the camaraderie of the show must go on, but it's Kylie Minogue doing a Vegas residency and you're the one holding the microphone. The thought of you, it's just when you think about someone like her, and then you obviously hope and dream that she's as nice as you would think. And then to hear that you're this like theater queen who is on set of your Netflix show and then she's teaching a choreo and then just like, here's my phone number. I just am so grateful that we gay people have a Kylie Minogue, you know?
I agree. And that she's like, you're not going to stalk me. Like, I just knew that I was like, I'm going to do the respect thing. But literally like 1 month later, Padam Padam came out. It was one of those things where like, that wasn't even out yet. And then I was like, girl, I was just like, this club just played your song 3 times and I've been here for 5 minutes. And she's like, what is happening? Like, I'm like texting her in real time when she's actually like re-blowing up for the 9,000th time.
I was going to say, she's the type of person, there's a reason why the straight people on your set were sort of just like, oh yeah, it's Kylie Minogue. And then gay people are always justifiably, you know, fawning at her because she's the type of person that... I mean, I don't know. It's similar to when Laura Benanti talked about when she was in Vegas and like you in Vegas, you get a lot of straight people who don't really get it. And then if you're performing like in New York City or like an LA moment, like there are crowds that are very much understanding it. So I feel like Kylie is probably often in spaces that are very straight that they know who she is, but don't get it. And then when she's all of a sudden with the Barafoa and she's like, OK, he not only gets it, but he's normal and he's not going to brandish a knife.
Right. Yes. She's also given me like swag for like this charity that I work with. I mean, she's just like, yeah, she's like signs it. Like, I'm like, you don't have to do that. You don't have to do all that. She's doing like above and beyond and just classy and following up. I'm just like, yeah.
Well, you know what, Barrett? I cannot wait for the one day your memoir comes out to hear about the from growing up in New York City, coming out at 14, doing big Broadway shows, 12 years of a giant cable network television show. And now you're doing this amazing show, The Residence. But sadly, I have to get towards the final chapter of this interview, if you can believe it. And I want to ask you a couple of quick questions before I do the final question. One question is, another piece of theater you did was Buyer and Seller. Now,
yes.
Great solo show. Incredible. For anybody who doesn't know what the story is, it's about the gay guy who was hired to work in Barbra Streisand's, essentially her basement, which was a full-on mall. You worked on this show, and obviously Barbra Streisand is many gays' favorite diva. Is she your number one, or would you say you have another Barbra-esque diva that you stan 200%?
Barbra was never sort of my gal. Not my gal, but not a number one. I sort of have this, I was always like a little not that guy. And I sort of wanna lean into that. Because I was
Good
I was
for
like
you.
I was like Patti LuPone, like Evita, like growing up, like all of that. I got like Betty Buckley, like came to Interlochen, and I was like, she's amazing. But like, I was never like, I need to worship at this diva's altar. I always had like a little bit of like, I just want to listen to like Bon Iver. I was always like Sufjan Stevens. I was like, I had like
I've read that you've done ayahuasca, so I get it. I mean,
you read that.
Or you did a podcast that I was when I was doing my Barrett deep dive. So it makes sense that those are the types of people that you're into. But then, okay, so if we're going from divas, is there any person or production or creative team member that would take you back to doing a Broadway show or take you back to a big theater moment?
I feel like it hasn't been written. I want to like create something new. I want to create a role that's like, that was written for me. Yeah.
And by the way, it's like, I don't want to be.
Yeah. I mean, thank you. I mean, it's like, I could be like, I want to play King George. Like, okay. I don't know. Whatever. Like Billy, what's his name in Chicago? Like, I don't know. Sure.
No, you're right. It's going to be a brand new show.
What's going to be new and interesting? I don't know.
Absolutely.
That's fun. And I'm also like, I'm now I want to direct and like, I'm sort of like in a new sort of world.
A new
anyway,
chapter.
But I'm excited. I'm excited for whatever that is. But I don't need to like totally, I never like hung my hat on like, this diva bitch, yes, which is not to say like you shouldn't. I'm just like, yeah.
Well, good. if we become crunchy girls about it, it almost sounds like you're just being present and you're saying I'm gonna like what I'm gonna like, and I'm not going to put my hat on one single thing because the universe is doing her thing, and I'm gonna be on this journey and see where she takes me.
I like that. I think another you could also like spin that and being like, I'm indecisive and I don't want to commit, but I like your version better.
No. You are a grounded, centered man who knows the value of Kylie Minogue, and you love Burning Man, and there's something so delicious about that. Now, Barrett Foa, I have to get to the final question of this gay-ass podcast, and that question is, if the world was ending, you could only save one character actress, who would you save? And if you don't have just one, because diva worship isn't your think that's okay.
Thank you. Okay, so let me say this. Growing up, I wasn't like so much TV. We weren't like TV, like TGIF kind of family. So, but I did have time. Like, I would eat dinner early before my parents got home from work. Both my parents worked, and I would watch reruns of like The Jeffersons and 227 and Cosby Show. And I think we're seeing a pattern here. So it would be like Wheezy from The Jeffersons or Jack K. Harry from 227. But really finally, I feel like it was like Felicia Rashad in those Claire Huxtable, like quiet and intense moments, like Vanessa, if you don't march upstairs, wash that makeup up off your face. And it was so scary because instead of yelling, she would get quiet, and it was so thrilling. And then I actually got to see her in Into the Woods in like the 3 months. I just looked it up recently. She was in it for only 3 months, and I got
Felicia
to see
Rashad
that.
Was.
She took over Bernadette Peters.
Holy shit! Okay, not me not knowing that. These. Such incredible answer for many reasons, because I was very much a Jeffersons person, the Cosby Show, and Jackie Harry, she obviously in 227 is your moment, but I was a sister, Gerlina, and
sure.
I still do with my friends from high school. We will still quote Jackie Harry from sister. She is the, to me, her character actressiness is so, I say this almost every time. She's the type of woman that is not only talented, charming, incredible, but I want to either smoke weed or have a glass of champagne or just be in a backyard with her. That's all I want, and I will be a happy man.
Would love.
Can you imagine?
Maybe.
Oh, wait, there's also a clip of her on Watch What Happens Live on Bravo with Regina King. And they're both, they had a little bit too much to drink. And so every time Annie asks them a question, you hear Jack Kay like, and then they go into her, their big laughs. It is so, oh my God. And then they do the big laugh. It is so, God, I love her so much. And Barrett, as expected, your answers are so genius. You're so heartfelt. You're so talented. And your success is our success as gay people. And you would do such a good job of putting yourself into your work and also just being a kind, good person, despite the fact you're working in an industry where there are a lot of monsters. And I'm so grateful that I got to meet you in person and then have you on this podcast and continue to be friends with you. And hopefully we get to dance on a dance floor soon. So I just wanted to make sure I say that before we sign off.
Thank you. But Eric, I feel the same way. I'm so excited that we're finally in each other's orbits.
I know. It really is the universe again. We love her. Will you please tell the listeners where to follow you and, of course, where they should check out the residence?
At Barrett Foa. That's two R's, two T's. B-A-R-R-E-T-T-F as in Frank O-A on the Instagram. And come over to the Netflix channel. We have We're playing The Residence for as long as you'll watch it. It's really good. It's so freaking funny and so bingeable. If I wasn't in it, I would be saying the same thing. I'd be like, who isn't watching The Residence? It is so funny and like murder mystery. And I always say like Downton Abbey meets Knives Out, but funny.
Yes, yes. And by the way,
it's like
it
upstairs,
is
downstairs.
So I mean, like Matt and I have been watching and we obviously love the mystery, but the laugh out loud moments are shocking because it's like it takes big swings, and that's what I appreciate about the show. It is like the bits are so fucking funny, the way that the stories are told, the flashbacks to the whole hearing. It's just like I agree with you. People should be listening, and of course you should be following Barrett. I'll link all the stuff in the description, and Barrett, I'll see you at the Interlaken reunion or on the dance floor.
I love the Gay Ass Podcast. I love you, Eric Williams.
I love you. What a joy.
Thanks for listening to That's a Gay Ass Podcast. And thank you to Barrett Foa for being such a great chap. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a comment on YouTube or just press like. And by all means, subscribe wherever you listen or watch these episodes. If you'd like to watch more gay assery, the Substack is where I'm posting all of the bonus episodes every single week. It is at ericwills.substack.com. And the last few bonus episodes will get you real soaking wet. ericwills.substack.com, where you can also see the full-length confession hole episodes, which are 45 minutes long, where I talk to people in a glory hole about their turn-ons, turn-offs, and their nasty-ass confessions. That's ericwills.substack.com. I love you all so much, and I'll see you for another gay-ass episode next week. So please, do me a favor. Stay gay. Bye.
You've been listening to That's a Gay-Ass Podcast, hosted by me, Eric Williams. If you want to see and hear more, make sure you're subscribed to us on Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, Spotify, Apple Music, or Patreon at Gay-Ass Podcast. That's a Gay-Ass Podcast is executive produced by Eric Williams and produced by Nathaniel McClure. We'll see you next week.
Hey, baseball fans, go yard with BetMGM, the sportsbook born in Vegas. Enjoy top odds on your favorite home run bets, fast and convenient ways to play same-game parlays, special boosts and tokens, and so much more. From the first pitch to the game-winning fireworks, there are more ways than ever to supercharge your excitement. Download the BetMGM app and get your piece of MLB action. BetMGM is an official partner of Major League Baseball. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus only. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER, available in the U.S. For New York, 8778. HOPE-NY, or text HOPE-NY 467-369. For Arizona, 1-800-NEXT-STEP. For Massachusetts, 1-800-3 877-527-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. First Bet offers for new customers only. All other promotions for existing customers. Subject to eligibility requirements. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/listen. That's forhers.com/listen. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.